Blog Talk Radio.
Pen. I'm Coach Pen. Yes, that is my intro theme music. Thank you, BJ, for that. I was kind of have a big, huge smile on my face because that's hilarious. Everybody, welcome back to the show. It's Third and Long with Coach Penn, and of course, I'm Coach Penn. I'm the head coach of the California Quake, and I've been quite busy. That's why I've been gone for so long. We've had a very hectic start to our season. I've had a very dedicated team, and we did practices this year. Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturdays, and when the season started, we just went to Tuesday, Thursdays, but a lot of the players asked for an extra day of practice, which we used for film. We had a very good turnout of film all year so far, but we have a bye this week, so I canceled film. I have a night to do the radio show, and what perfect timing it is, because it is the midway point of most of the season, so I have lots to discuss with you this evening, including, but not limited to, we're going to go over the IWFL, the surprises and disappointments from teams, also the way they rank the teams with the Massey ratings, and all the inaccuracies that I see and other people see with the Massey ratings and the stat program, not so much the program itself, but the fact that people just aren't reporting stats. And then I'll switch over to the WFA, but because I'm not really that involved, I will just be covering what I've seen and what I think is good and bad. Specifically, how many forfeits have they already had? Is there close games as much as there is in the IWFL? Because we've seen a lot of blowouts so far this year. I'm not going to lie. There's been a ton of blowouts. So obviously, there is a big discrepancy from top to bottom, and there's not much middle. So right now, we're dealing with the bell curve in all of women's football. Lastly, the playoff structure for the WFA has been a big topic on the boards, and I want to go over that. There's been lots of changes and everything like that. And then I wanted to let everybody know that this Saturday there's a rematch from one of the surprises. The Tucson Monsoon are 4-0. They beat the SoCal Breakers last week in Tucson 14-13, and they play again this week in Irvine. So I will be there broadcasting the game. I'm not sure if I'll have a colored person, but maybe I'll just change the sound of my voice and be another colored person. I can probably be split personality like that if need be. I'm sure everybody will have a good time listening to me go crazy because I am big into football, as all my players know. My girl calls me the Rain Man, which is, I don't know if that's an insult or a compliment, but because I'm a football person, I'm like, hey, well, thanks. So let me start with the very beginning, congratulating Coach Lee on his new announced position. Not really sure what to make of it. He's coaching a women's football team that is not affiliated with the International Federation of Football, but he's coaching them just the same. So I think it's cool, but I know he's the owner of the Las Vegas Showgirls, so I just hope it doesn't take any time away from that, because I know he has so many big and broad plans for his Vegas Showgirls, and I'd hate to see the team suffer because he's taking on too many things. So good luck with that, and congratulations, Coach. As a coach in the IWFL, we are affiliated with the USA Football, which is the recognized official international competition for, I guess, amateur football status. We don't have a women's football team, but I know they're working on it. The IWFL has done a bunch of cool things. You know, all the referees and coaches have to be certified with the USA Football, and while the test may not be directed towards our specific brand of football, it's good to learn and see some of the things. I mean, the USA Football site has lots of cool drills. They added a film room, so that's pretty nice to have. So I've been pretty happy this year with all the tools that the league has provided. And, you know, this is my 8th year coaching women's football, and I have seen improvements year after year in the leagues. So we are getting better. But one of the analogies I used when being interviewed by the LA Times this past Saturday was that for those of you who have seen Leatherheads, it's a George Clooney movie with the John Krasinski from The Office. It's about pro football in the early centuries, you know, when the Prohibition was on in the 20s, college football's huge, NFL football was a joke. And this was the 20s. NFL football really didn't catch on till, you know, 50s, 60s, and the 60s, of course, is when the Super Bowl started happening. So, I mean, it took the NFL 40 years to become what it is. And, I mean, we're in year number 10 of this reincarnation. So, I mean, I think we're progressing fairly nicely, but the reason my show is called Third Long is because we still have so much farther to go. There are always improvements out there to be made, and I just hope that all the owners, players, and management of the leagues, which there are two now, are, you know, receptive to ideas. And my biggest complaint is the fact that people become so stubborn-headed that they think they're so right and other people aren't wrong. They just go off and join another league or start another league or start a new team instead of trying to input something into proving the team that's already in existence. Southern California is another area, but it's one of those areas that can exist with multiple teams. I mean, the Quake are having a down year, but what people don't realize with the Quake is we're a completely different team than last year. We have three people playing in the exact same positions that we had last year. So, I mean, this is a brand new team. I basically have a team full of rookies, talented rookies as they are. You know, it takes a while to really come together as a unit. And after playing Sacramento and L.A. in our first two games, we knew we had miles to go before we sleep. But the next time we played them, we were very competitive. While the scores might look like 2 and 3 touchdown blowout wins, they were not at all. They were very well-contested games, and it proves to me, my fans, and my players that we are improving. So football is a very different sport, and that's sort of like what we go through every year. I mean, because we have surprises and disappointments for all of women's football. I'll be getting into that a little bit later, but back to Southern California, you know, we have the California Lynx, the SoCal Breakers, the California Quake, the LA Amazons. Those are four teams. And things all go right. All four of them, or no, we're out of the playoffs, sorry. Three of the four could actually make the playoffs in one general area. You know, the LA, they're probably in. SoCal, if they can win out, they have a slight chance to make it in the Tier 2 bracket. And then the Lynx, if they can play some defense against the Showgirls and get their offense together, they could slip in on that side of the bargain, too. So, I mean, we got a lot of teams down here that are very good, but when you have places like Connecticut that has two teams and smaller, not saturated with tons of people markets, it's like, you know, it's hard to sustain a good team year in and year out and build from that. So that's enough ranting for right now. I have a bunch of things to cover and all kinds of opinions that I've seen thrown out there. Remember, this is my show. I'm giving my opinion. And if you want to say something about it, you can hop online and talk with me. The number is 347-826-7278, and we'll put you right through. You can ask me some questions or throw your opinion out there. Don't be all shy and keep it to yourself if you want to be heard. Hey, guess what? Hop on the show. We also have a little chat room that pops up down at the bottom, WFBTalkContinues.com. Hop in there. BJ's in there. If I'm not looking at it, she'll, you know, make sure and buzz me in, telling me that there's somebody that has something to say, and I'll respond to you. Don't think I don't listen. I've had a couple people on the show before that are very intuitive, and they have their opinions, and let's get them all heard. If you're just listening at home, you know, just call in. If you're listening to this later, make sure you email me, headcoach@CaliforniaQuakeFootball.com. Really easy to remember. So, for me, it's been a disappointing season in that we lost the games that we were hoping to steal a couple in. I went into the season knowing it was going to be a rough year with the people we had not returning, but I was hopeful because of the amount of new people we got. They were very talented, but we had to become a team first, and it took us a little while to get there. So instead of stealing one from Sacramento or the Amazons, we ended up losing all four, so we're out of the playoffs. So I would consider that a disappointment. I know a lot of people have been talking, what happened to the Quake this year? They suck. And I was like, yeah. All right. Sacramento has been playing together 7 years. The Amazons, their core group, as I talked to Duncan, have been together for 4 to 5 years. They know what they're doing. And Duncan doesn't change too much and that's why they're so good at what they run. We actually did very well against them the second game we played them. They killed us in the first quarter, which took an hour to play. But then we held them to one touchdown the rest of the game, and we managed to score two more. So, I mean, you know, we're improving, but I would say, yes, California Quake has been a disappointment on a grander scale because we were 8-0 last year, went to the playoffs, and this year we're not even going to make the playoffs. But I'm not down about it. My girls are coming together as a team. We're playing like a team in these next three games. We're going to get everybody the experience. So the next year, we can be one of the surprises because everybody will underestimate us again. More disappointments from the IWFL. I have the standings right here, and I will start with the Western Conference. Disappointment. I was kind of surprised at the Vixen. I did not think they would do that bad. Western Conference, the only two disappointments I had were us and the Vixen. I didn't think the Vixen were going to be blown out every single game like they have been, and they've just been getting killed. So that was very surprising to me. The Eastern Conference, disappointments, the Philadelphia Firebirds. Kind of shocked with that one. So I'm thinking that the Philadelphia Liberty Bells must have got most of the other team, or it was split up so much that they got what's left over or something like that. I was surprised. I thought they'd be a bit better. Detroit Demolition. I mean, yes, they're 2-2, but one of those wins is over a Tier 2 team. And their wins just, you know, that, or I should say, their win over a Tier 1 team was just not that much. They have a real big chance this week to improve or live up to my expectations, you know, because they're so grand and everybody cares about what I think, when they play the Pittsburgh Passion. And I'm sorry, that's not this Saturday. That's next Saturday on the 23rd. That will actually be huge for them. If they can do that, that could be a ruiner for the Pittsburgh team. They could actually be knocked out of the playoffs if Detroit can pull it together and beat them. Another disappointment, and this one everybody knows, is the Houston Energy. I was concerned about Houston joining for the fact that they hadn't played in a year. And all you coaches out there know that the players don't take care of themselves in the offseason. I mean, there are some teams that have great offseason workout programs, Dallas Diamonds being one of them. I'm not too familiar with any other ones. I mean, we have a program, but not familiar with many of the players have ever participated in it. I'm just shocked at the Houston Energy. I knew they wouldn't be as big and bad as they thought they were going to be, but it's just amazing to see them go 0-4 to start the season. Looks like they're pulling things together. They beat a Tier 2 team last week, but they're not looking forward to a good rest of the season. I know they have to play Dallas again in the first game of the season, 69-0, so we'll see what kind of improvements they've made. Now, that's enough for the negatives of the IWFL. Let's go over to the positives for this midseason recap. The positives, surprises. I call them surprises because of the seasons they had last year and what I had expected them to do this year. Biggest one of all is DC Divas. There have always been a very high-quality football team. Last year going 4-4, I guess lit a fire under them, and they came out this year, and they're just rocking the house. It's unbelievable how well they are playing. They've only allowed a touchdown, and that was to Pittsburgh. But they beat Pittsburgh 27-7, and everybody knows Pittsburgh is a good team. So, and they're not a defensive or offensive team. Pittsburgh is a well-balanced team that knows how to get things done, and to shut them down like that, that's very impressive. So they're destined for greatness this year, it looks, and looks like they will be on a path to tangle with Dallas. That should be interesting. Most of the surprises for me came in Tier 2. First of all, I have to say that the way the IWFL set up the system has its positives, has its flaws. The one thing cool I like is that Tier 2 is the best 8 teams. They're all grouped together, you know, and it's the best 8 teams based on their overall rating goes to the playoffs. And I think that's pretty darn cool, truthfully. As for the Tier 1, not so much okay with it. Seattle has one team in their division, you know, and then Boston has five teams in the division. It's a little unbalanced. I would have preferred for them to just do the same thing with Tier 1. Just say Tier 1, Tier 2, top four teams from both of them go in, you know. I think that would have been more fair, or no, fairer, you know, which one goes, I don't know. But the two surprises from Tier 2, Carolina Phoenix and the Carolina Queens. Now, these two are already on a collision course because they're both in Carolina, so you know they have to play each other. But they don't play each other till the end of the season. That would be on May 30th, and then the season finale, June 13th. So it's going to be huge, and the game on the 23rd will give us a little bit of guidance because the Phoenix will play the Punishers, who the Queens already beat, 26-14. So that should give us a little guidance. I think I already know what's going to happen, and I have my guesstimates out there, so we'll see if I am correct, and you'll find out more about that when I go over the playoffs. So the surprises and disappointments, you know, that was it. I expected Seattle to be good. I expected the Amazons to be good. I expected Chicago to be good. Kansas City, they went 4-4 last year and gave Dallas one of the closest games all season. And I was pretty impressed with them last year watching them film. I figured if they could do a couple things right, more right, that they would be a good team. And they are proving that they are a good team this year. Looks like they have, barring any just drastic surprises, they have the wild card seed locked up in the Western Conference. I mean, they play Clarksville. Yeah, it's a Tier 2 opponent, but, you know, the way they've been beating Tier 2 opponents, I don't think they're going to have a problem. Then they have their redemption game against Chicago, which they played very well, 28-6, but it just shows how far they have to come. And they finish up with Wisconsin and Minnesota, two teams they already just beat up already. So, I mean, Kansas City is going to be a wild card team this year, playoff team, and we'll be able to see what they can do. Unfortunately, the thing that I don't like is that it looks like they're going to have to play Chicago in the first round of the playoffs. So that sucks. I mean, it just sucks to play people three times. Sometimes that's how it happens. So, let's say, BJ's telling me to refresh. I fell out, but I was still in the chat room, so I guess she wasn't. And we'll see if anybody else is in the chat room. And it's loading. Oh, there are a couple people in there now. So WFN Radio's in there. Hello. And then let me see who else is in there. Do we have a guest? Oh, Spider's on. What's up, Spider? How's the body feeling? Spider's one of my players, former coach. She got injured last game. She's recuperating during the bye week. So hope all is well in bed. So let's see. Those were my surprises and disappointments for the year so far. Next, I'm going to go over the playoff picture and ranking system. Now, the guy from, FemaleTackleFootball.com, what's his name, John? I can't remember his name. He sent me an email to kind of get me into the flow. Yeah, John. John sent me an email how the problems he has with the Massey ratings and the theory and all that fun stuff. You know, I'm a big college football fan, so I hate all the ratings, especially when you have divisions. But I understand why the IWFL did it. I think after some tweaking, it could work a little bit better. And I know that he's big on the whole, ranking system that he uses, but I don't think that's any better than what, I mean, you look at his thing and it's just, I don't think that it's that much better. I mean, it has Seattle at number one, and he says it's the most unbiased one out there. Sorry, it's got to be a little biased. You need to have somebody doing it. Anytime you're going to have a computer ranking teams, it's not going to be correct or some sort of formula. You rank teams based on what you play, and guess what? I've watched almost every single team play this year because I download all the film and watch it because I am a true fan and student of women's football. I've seen almost every one of these teams play that I've talked about. And I can tell you right now that the best teams out there are most likely Dallas and D.C. Those are the two teams playing the best. I mean, Dallas doesn't even look like they're trying when they play. You know, and we'll see later because they'll play in the playoffs. So all this stuff about, you know, the Massey ratings takes this into effect and, you know, all that stuff, I don't really care. You know, my problem is the fact that the Massey ratings still have Reading in it, still have Oakland in it, and those teams aren't even playing this year. And the league responded to John from FTF, saying that they take it into their calculation, those teams aren't really playing, so they make up for it that way. And I call BS. Because I'm not saying they're not doing that, but I'm saying it's impossible because his ratings are based off of the schedule you play and the teams you go against. And if Reading and Oakland are part of the calculations of forfeits and wins, then it's wrong from the get-go. So there's no way to take it out unless you're running the formula. And guess what? Massey's the only one running the formula. So, and I know that those two teams are not on the standings on the IWFL website, so that's great. But guess what? The formula, Massey Rico's Massey rating, then overall rating. The Massey rating incorporates those two games, and it treats them like a win. Like Portland got a 2-0 victory over Oakland, and, you know, so they get credit for that. So it's just like, it's just, you know, a joke. So there's some inaccuracies that need to be worked out. I wish Massey would update his system because, you know, those two teams need to take an effect, and there seems to be a real East Coast bias in there. You know, it's just funny to me how L.A. can keep dropping, and all they do is just kill people. I mean, I've played against L.A. They're good, okay? I played against Sacramento. They're good, too. Do either one of them deserve something more than the other? Then that'll be decided later. So we'll figure that out then. But, I mean, it's just wrong to have a team like Seattle who's just dominated everybody be, like, you know, 12th. He's like, are you telling me there's 11 other teams better than Seattle? I'm sorry. It's just wrong. And then, you know, I don't agree with it. I think it's the right track to do to make things equal until everybody's brought up to par. But it's not going to work as well in the Tier 1 as they had hoped because somebody's going to get screwed. And it's going to be even worse in the Tier 2. First of all, there should be two different ranking systems. There should be Tier 1 and then Tier 2. I'm sorry, but almost every single Tier 2 team can beat a Tier 1 team. And then you'll say, well, you know, Wisconsin has a Tier 1 victory, so does Manchester, and so does Orlando. Well, guess what? Wisconsin should probably be Tier 1, and then Minnesota should probably be Tier 2, or they both should be Tier 2. That's the simpleness of it right there. And who was one of the other teams? The Houston Energy lost to a Tier 2 team. Yeah, Houston Energy is not really Tier 2 or Tier 1. Connecticut Crushers, not a Tier 1 team. Who else? Minnesota Vikings. Those are the only Tier 1 teams that have lost to a Tier 2 team. And all three of them should probably be Tier 2. And I know how they structure Tier 2 is, you know, has to do with budget, roster size, and a couple other things. So, I mean, I just think it's a little bit inaccurate. The playoff structure. We'll start with the Tier 1 because that's what I'm involved with and I'm most familiar with. Let's start with the West. West. Got basically five teams eligible for the playoffs right now. And I heard some complaining on the Women's Football Ning site about how can it be settled after week one or after week four and then just be out of the playoffs. It's because we play eight games. It's decided. So it's just it's funny. When you only play, you know, let's see, one, two, five, there's eight teams in the West. So you're going to know real quick. It just happens in women's football. Until we have, you know, 16 teams on one side of the thing, you're not going to know until later in the season. All right, Chicago, unless they screw up tremendously against Detroit or Kansas City, and they played Detroit twice, so they have the number one seed. They have the toughest schedule. They play all Tier 1 teams, and they should all be victories. The game this weekend will tell us how good Chicago really is because Detroit beat KC more convincingly. So that is a little bit deceiving, I guess you could say, but I mean, some teams match up better with others, so you never know. Their number one seed is at risk, but they do control their own destiny. If they win out, they're good, so they should be fine. Chicago should lock up the number one seed, and everybody has to go to Chicago, and I would tell you what, I've been to Chicago for the championship game. They have a lot of fans, and it is a home field advantage. Number two seed, the Amazons are the number two seed right now, but I don't think they'll stay there. for the main reason that they only have one Tier 1 team left on their schedule, and that's going to hurt them. They have five Tier 2 games. The fact that they only play Sacramento once is a joke to me. That's just crazy. Let's give the team the championship for that division by, you know, making them only play the Sacramento team once. And I know the rule, they have to play everybody at least once. Well, we had to play Sacramento twice, and we had to play LA twice. And we don't even get to play our closest competitor, which is Southern California. So that was kind of weird. We should have taken off one that's also a big revenue game for the teams down here, because you should be helping the teams make money by competing against each other. Let's see. So they have two big wins over us, and then they have a couple just kills against the Tier 2 team, which they'll have three more. I will be going to Sacramento for that one, and that could be for a playoff spot for Sacramento, so they might have a lot to play for in that game. I'm sure they'll give a fight no matter if they do or not, but it just added incentive is always encouraging. They're going to be getting healthy the next 3 weeks. They have a lot of injuries right now. I know we beat the crap out of them. I've never went through a line shaking hands where I had to shake everybody's opposite hand because their shoulders or arms are just dead. That's just crazy. I was proud of my team that they beat them up that bad. So that was fun. But here's the thing. They will have a bye before playing Sac. So they have 2 weeks to prepare for Sac's motion wing T-style offense. The number three seed is Seattle right now. And they're at a disadvantage in the fact that they play Portland four times, and that's the only, you know, team in the league, I think, that plays somebody four times. And that was because of the falling out of Redding or Corvallis taking a short schedule. I'm not really sure. But either way, it's no good. At least they're a Tier 1 team, and that's four victories. Plus, they play Sacramento twice. So they have six games as opposed to three for the Amazons. So they could easily jump the Amazons in the ranking system because they're just playing Tier 1 teams. So that's my little tidbit there. They have three of the last four games on the road. And, I mean, they are in Seattle. And Seattle, I mean, they have to go to Sacramento. Not too far, but that's a trip. Portland's a little bit closer. And then they have to go to Tucson. That's a long way away to play in weather that you're not familiar with. And I do not see Tucson having a chance at all in winning that game. But still, and that's not something you want to do going into the playoffs. If they beat Sacramento this weekend, they actually have eliminated them from the playoffs, because I don't see Sacramento making it in with three losses. Sacramento has to finish 6-2 with quality wins over Seattle and L.A., and that's the only chance they have to jump KC, who I have as the number four seed. KC's the number four seed, basically because the Massey ratings were never reset like I was told they were going to be after 3 weeks into the season. The Massey ratings use the formula based on the previous season's results, and as the games move forward, last season's results are weaned out, which is bullshit. Now I'm calling BS on that one again. That's something that John had actually emailed me about, saying that, you know, the games for the current season should count, and I think they do. But the farther into the season you go, the less and less the earlier games count. Truthfully, it should be on an 8-game system, I guess. You know, you should just – it's my problem with the BCS. They use a voter-controlled poll. Well, the voters shouldn't vote until 3 weeks into the season have played. And then they should vote based on what they've seen and then throw it from there. You know, but there's always a preseason poll because they need that hype to sell college football and to make all this money. Well, that's the same thing we're doing. That's just crap. Kansas City's blowing out. All Tier 2 teams are playing. They have a test against Clarksville, which is, you know, considered a top-notch Tier 2 team this weekend. So we'll be able to see, you know, if they win that one, they basically will have the number four seed all locked up to themselves, win or lose against Chicago. Beating Chicago, I don't even think will help them move into a higher seed. I think basically, win or lose, they're going to be the number four seed. They control their own destiny, but could be passed, you know, if Sacramento can manage those two wins. Sacramento, they will be at home this weekend against the Seattle team, and that's going to be a good game. I can't wait to watch the video. And a lot of people don't know this, and because I talked to a lot of coaches and have insight with some of the players and all the teams, When they traveled to Seattle, they lost three linemen for the season going to Seattle, two offensive linemen and a defensive lineman. And for Sacramento's offense to work, they need everybody there and on the same page. That's why they're so successful, is that the fact that they all know who's going to they're gonna block, no matter who's in front of them, what kind of defense they see, what kind of stunt. They are that well conditioned mentally as a team, and that's what makes them successful, is that conditioning as a team mentally. I mean, beating Seattle and the Amazons will probably be pretty hard, but then again, even if they do, they could still miss out on the playoffs. So, sorry, Sack, that one loss looks like it's going to be too much for you. I mean, 7-1, and you might not even get in. 6-2, you're definitely not in. You're just too far behind KC once again because they were never reset, and the West Coast teams never get any respect. Sorry. Besides the Amazons, who consistently have dropped, do not get any respect. Move over to the East Coast now. East Coast. Eastern Conference, let me reiterate. DC Divas, once again, number one seed, it's theirs. They only have, they've only played three games. That's going to be huge going into the postseason because they're not, their buys are gone. They're done. They don't have any more buys. You know, they've already used them. And so they now have to play five straight games, and then they'll have a bye going into the playoffs, you know, that one-week bye that everybody gets. The one thing cool is they won't have to travel. They'll lock up the number one seed. Let me see. It could have an effect. And it would, another thing, just like, you know, Chicago and KC might have to end up playing each other in the first round, guess who they're going to play? Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh looks like they're going to be the number four seed, and we'll get more into that later. The number two seed, and how can Dallas be a number two seed when they did what they did last year, and they're doing it again this year? Like DC, they've only allowed one touchdown this year, but they've played four games, and they have a 27-0 victory that will hurt them in the Massey ratings because it doesn't count the fact that it was only half a game. The game ended at halftime, so... I'm looking forward to the game against Miami because Miami's actually been playing pretty good this year. The rest of the games are basically a cakewalk. Let me see. And if you, whoever has to travel to Dallas, which I think will be Boston, that you better hope you play well enough to jump them and they have to come to you because you do not want to go to Dallas in the middle of the summer because they like to schedule 3 o'clock games to take the advantage because they're used to the weather. So you need to make sure that you win your games handily and then press whatever the ranking systems is. And I'm talking to Boston because right now they're the number three seed who would have to travel to Dallas. They could be the number two team if they have convincing victories over tier one teams, which they play 3 weeks in a row, Philadelphia, Baltimore, and the Nemesis. They end on the intensity, so that last game could be kind of intense. BJ's asking if I need more time. If I need more time, it'll just end, you know. And I'm just going along, and I'll just talk. I'm trying to get everything covered. So, but Boston should win out easily. They don't really have any challenges ahead, but the score and how convincingly they win could be a determining factor in if they become the number two seed. Number four seed right now is Pittsburgh, and they control their own destiny. They win out, and then they'll get rematch with DC, but they'll be at DC again. The people hoping that Pittsburgh slips up, Miami Fury, they have two hard games left, Atlanta and Dallas, and they should be okay. But if they went out and went out, if they actually go 8-0, they could actually miss out in the playoffs. So that'll be amazing. I don't think they can beat Dallas, but even finishing 7-1 and missing out in the playoffs is kind of rough. But good luck to Miami. I'm interested in seeing that game. And then laying in the cut is Atlantic. Atlanta Explosion. They lost to Dallas 32-7, and that right there should show the discrepancy. They will finish 7-1, and they will miss the playoffs if they beat Miami. Their one challenging game left is Miami, which I'm not really sure, but these two teams have been in a fight for a long time. So, you know, just I don't know. I don't see them jumping Pittsburgh in the rankings. And that's tier one right there. Those are my opinions and my choices, and I'm sticking to it. So tier two, a little bit more complicated. There's about 13 teams vying for 8 positions right now. I haven't broken down the 13 teams right now that could slide in there. All right. Wisconsin, first of all, is the number one seed in Tier 2. Sorry, wrong joke. If they finish 4-4 and they are the number one seed, that right there shows how bad the system is. No 4-4 team, I don't care who you play, should be the number one seed in anything. That's just unacceptable in my book, and something will need to be fixed next year. The crazy thing is they match up against Chicago well, but not against KC. So obviously they have no pass defense. So if you're looking to beat Wisconsin, Iowa and Minnesota, start learning how to pass the ball, because obviously they can't cover anybody. They do well against running teams, Chicago, but when KC came, they lost 50-0, and all KC does is pass the ball. And that right there is a perfect example of how matchups in football is what it's all about. The surprise teams, Carolina Phoenix, Carolina Queens. I expect the Carolina Phoenix to go 8-0. And if they're 8-0, and Wisconsin's 4-4, and they're not the number one seed, it's just ridiculous. I mean, I don't think I could be any more upset or disappointed with the league if that was to happen. And we'll see. The game on the 23rd against Palm Beach Thunderers, like I said, will tell us how good they are and how close the Carolinas are. And then, of course, next week on May 30th, they play each other, and I expect Carolina to win. That is the Phoenix. The Queens, on the other hand, they have gone fine at 5-0. Congratulations. They are probably going to lose their last three games. I'm not wishing this upon them. I'm not saying that I don't believe that they can win them. I'm just saying that the Chattanooga Locomotion looked to be a better team, and the fact that they didn't play last week, they got a 2-0 victory in the form of a forfeit because of the field conditions, I think it's going to hurt them. Chattanooga will come in and take care of business, and then they're going to end up with Phoenix, and I anticipate them losing. So they could finish 5-3 and out of the playoff race with three straight losses. The Montreal Blitz are 2-2 right now. If they can win their Tier 2 games, they'll be in. If they play New York close, New York Nemesis close, like they did last time, they could even improve their seeding. I think they might be able to win, but once again, those Canadians play with a different set of rules. They always have the advantage at home. So let's just see. Hey, Spider, if I don't get to the WFA, it's okay. I'm okay. I don't really care. I can cover that next show. Clarksville Fox is the next team in the rankings. They've only played three games as well, but they have to play Kansas City, which I expect them to lose, and then they play Chattanooga, which I expect them to lose. They could finish 4-4, and I don't know if that will help them get in the playoffs, but I think they will make it. The New England Intensity have a couple games left. They play the Sharks and Militia, but they'll be able to test how good they are, but I see them finishing 6-2 and well within the playoff race. Chattanooga Locomotion, I see them winning out, and their only loss being to the Atlantic Explosion with the same score, basically the same score that Dallas beat them by. So, I mean, Chattanooga is obviously a good team. I see them winning out, being 7-1, and truthfully, they would be the number two seed in my book. They would be the number two seed. I don't care what the overall rating says. They would be the number two seed. The Palm Beach Punishers are ranked next, but they're out of the playoffs. They play Atlantic Explosion, the Carolina Phoenix, the Mayhem, and the Fury. They will lose all those. They'll finish 2-6. They're out. Manchester Freedom, they're right now 2-3, so not good for them, but they have three cake games to finish up with, Southern Maine, Erie, and Southern Maine. So they should finish 5-3 with a slight possibility of making the playoffs. Jersey Justice, they're the exact opposite, 3-2. Is it 3-2? Yeah, 3-2. So I expect them to finish 5-3. I think the Nighthawks will probably beat them this weekend, but then they'll pull out two more victories with Southern Maine and Erie coming along, finishing 5-3, playoff contender. Orlando Mayhem, next in the rankings. They're 1-3 right now with a win over a Tier 1 team, albeit the Houston Energy. So I see them beating Palm Beach, but then losing to the rest of the teams and finishing up 2-6. They're out of the playoffs. Next would be the surprise. I mean, the Tucson Monsoon. Tucson Monsoon are 4-0 after squeaking out a victory against SoCal, and I just watched that video today, and I was impressed with them in the first half, even though their two touchdowns were not so much luck, but the bounce of the ball. This week they come to SoCal. I think they'll lose. They'll then beat New Mexico, and I see them losing to Los Angeles and Seattle. If they happen to beat SoCal again, they'll finish 6-2, and if they don't make it to the playoffs, that's another just travesty. It's just a joke. They finished 6-2, and because they started out so low in the Massey ratings, because they don't get any respect, to not make the playoffs is a slap in the face. But I do see them finishing 5-3 and trying to sneak in. Unfortunately, because they started so low and losing the last two games, it's going to hurt them. SoCal, on the other side, has a chance to finish 5-3, winning their last two games. They do have the Amazons again, but if they can beat Tucson this weekend, they can basically finish up 5-3 with two wins and maybe sneak off as the eighth seed in the Tier 2 system. So that's it for the playoff structure of the IWFL and the ranking system, and I think I got all of it out against the Massey ratings. Like I said, John had a lot to say about it. I think his points are moot just because the fact that, you know, it's just from the startup. I mean, I don't think the Massey ratings are necessarily a bad thing. I think no matter what system you use, it's going to be flawed, and you should at least start with the right information, and he's not even starting with the right information. Albeit the fault of the league or the fault of him, Redding and Oakland should not be in the calculated formula at all. Remove them. How about you fix the schedule on there, because you still have to fix it weekly based on the fact that Oakland dropped out. Now I can move on to the WFA. WFA is not my league, but I do follow women's football, and I want to bring up some games that have been very, very good games. Philadelphia Liberty Bells, I brought up that they're doing quite well. Jacksonville Dixie Blues, who I am very familiar with, Rocky Brown's still playing. That's just crazy. And all the Houston games, or all the Texas games, have been very competitive. I mean, Austin and Houston, 40-34. And then we had the next week, we had Austin and Lone Star, 14-13. Then you had Lone Star and Houston, 20-12. And where's another one? We had, 28-14. So, I mean, there are some really good games over there. They're competitive, you know, and it's not about judging whether one league is superior or not. It's just the level of competition. Are you playing teams you're competitive with? And both leagues seem to have the same percentage of blowouts. So, from top to bottom, there is just a lot imparities? I don't know. But let's go to the standings right now and go over some of their playoff structure, because some things have changed. Connecticut hasn't played a game. What's another team that hasn't played a game? Let's see. East Texas Sabres hasn't played a game. Marana She Devils haven't played a game. How about you remove them from the schedule and stop giving people forfeits? If they only play a couple games, great. And there was an announcement today from Coach Bartley that their game with Vegas this weekend has been moved to the 27th, so they're playing after the season's over. And the West Coast teams got really screwed because Marana dropped out, and so now it's just Vegas, California, and Phoenix. And, you know, Vegas is 2-0, with one of those being a victory, so I was kind of looking forward to going to that game this weekend, but when I saw the score from the Tucson Burgers game, I was like, oh, I'm definitely going to that one now, because, I know Coach Manny. We worked together the whole preseason to get our teams ready for the season, and I think we both benefited from it. But let's see, you know, you got the Philadelphia Liberty Bells, 3-0, looking to get in the playoffs. West Michigan Mayhem, 201 points they've scored, and they've allowed zero. I think they're going to be something to watch over there. Got the Columbus Comets, they're 3-0. You have the Gulf Coast Riptide, 3-0, along with the Jacksonville Dixie Blues. And if I had to choose between the two, Dixie Blues, Dixie Blues, Dixie Blues. I like their pink jerseys last game. That was pretty cool. They did a little cancer thing with pink jerseys, and go to the WFA website, WFAfootball.com. It actually has some pictures in there. That was pretty neat. The Iowa Thunder, completely different team than the Iowa Crush, Crush of the IWFL. But they're 3-0, so that's congratulations to them. You also got the St. Louis Slam at 2-0. Then you got Austin, 4-0, and you have the Showgirls, 2-0, but there's so much more to go on for the WFA West Coast teams, because, I mean, they started a week behind us, and they have I'm outside like normal, and kids are running by screaming, so excuse that. But there's so many forfeits and readjustments to the schedule that it's just, you know, nuts. let's see, what else? So somebody brought up the fact there's been a lot of talk about the playoff format for the WFA. So let's see. They have several divisions, or regions they're calling them, six it looks like, and they all, whoever wins each region goes, and then there's one wild card, but the wild card can only come from a certain division. So that is a bit odd, but it makes sense. People are complaining about the fairness of it. Well, guess life and football isn't fair. If you want to start a team, move to a place that has weak opponents and not a lot of teams, and you can go every year. But then again, you better be able to raise the money because you're going to be traveling a lot and coming to things, and that's one thing I want to know. How are they picking who hosts? Who hosts? It says Region 1 site. That's it. It's Region 1 site. That's all it says. And the WFA Championship is in New Orleans. So who knows how that's going to be structured. I didn't research it that much. I just kind of looked at it, saw what it was about, and then do that. I like the stat program the WFA is running up, but once again, it's all based on whether teams submit stats, and there was some things on the IDBS on the inside about that that I'm always on the sites checking out, trying to help people that need help. The league actually called me the other day because I had a lot of problems with the stat program, the fact that there were inaccuracies, so I've been emailing them and they're trying to fix things. I don't know if you noticed, but IDBS finally has a stat leaders page, which is cool. If you go to the stats link, it pops up and it shows, you know, league leaders and stuff. So, I mean, that's fine. It only took how many years? So, that's nice to see them finally getting there. The WFA has a very, very friendly stat program, but, I mean, you can tell that it's incomplete because there's just so many things going on that people have not submitted, not reported. So, it's inconsistent and I don't know, how do you want to say it? Unsubstantiated. Oh, yeah, just because, you know, it's funny because I have a running back that's ranked ninth in the IBFL in rushing, yet she's a rookie, and she's only had one good game. So it's either like nobody's running the ball this year or a lot of people aren't submitting their stats correctly, and I'm pretty sure that's what it is. I made a suggestion to the league about wanting something to do with the stats. Let me see if they actually did that or if it's still the same as if it was the other day. And for some reason, my computer's all freezing up right now. It has to do with my mouse. It doesn't have the team listed next to the name for people. So I suggested that they, you know, make sure they put the team. I mean, you can click on the person and it'll take you to their team. But, there's no team listed, so you don't, unless you know the names, which I do. I mean, Jenny Smith, that's going to be KC. Sam Krasafi is Chicago. Brendan McKnight is Minnesota. Wisconsin. That's Wisconsin. The Hallsworth, New York. Well, I can't do. I mean, I know all these names, so I mean, I can actually pick them out and tell you who they are. But I mean, for those unfamiliar with everybody's team roster, it's going to be kind of hard. But it's nice to see that they're improving. That there is some changes. So let's see. Anybody going to be in the LA area this weekend or OC area, San Diego area? I will be doing the Breakers versus Monsoon game. You know, it would be nice to do a close game, put my personality on the air for everybody to see. I love doing play-by-play. It should be quite exciting. I'm very familiar with both teams as we've played Tucson twice every year for the past 3 years except this year. And because we scrimmaged the Breakers umpteen times this preseason, I know everything about there is to know about them. So you should be able to get a very informative show. I'll try to make it fun. I do not have a color person, so if you are in town and want to see a good football game and know football and would like to point some things out, you know, hit me up at headcoach@californiaquakefootball.com. Do a quick interview, maybe get you off of the game, and I'll get a color person on there. The game is at 7 o'clock. It should be in Irvine. I'm not sure where their home stadium is because I know they have two. So I will check that out when you email me. But let's see. I'm going to go over one last thing before I go, and that's the amount of blowouts from each league. It looks like it's about 50%. if not 50%, give or take 10%, in both leagues. You know, blowouts, or not blowouts, shutouts. Shutouts, so, I mean, people are going to wake up on their offense. I mean, as the season has progressed, offenses are getting a little bit better and not getting shut out, but, I mean, the blowouts are still about 50% or more, whereas the shutouts are beginning less and less. So, guys, work on offense. You know, make sure your defense is actually giving you something to work at, because the speed of a game is so much faster than practice, and it's hard to initiate the speed there. And I know some people have short rosters, and the women don't come to practice, so you have 35 people there on game day, but you only have, you know, 18 at practice. Yes, it's consistent across the board. I've been very, very lucky this year to have a group of dedicated ladies who show up at practice. I mean, we have a bye week, and I've never had 20-plus people at practice on a bye week. I had 23 people there last night. We had some fun. We took off our helmets and shoulder pads, and we basically went over some off-season conditioning work that they should all be doing, and then we played flag football for an hour. You know, we included all of our personal trainer, or all the trainers, and we included the coaches, and we just had fun, you know, trying to get the love of the game back out there, and, you know, try and make sure that you, all your coaches out there, you know, it's a lot of pressure and it's a lot of frustration dealing with teaching people that are not very familiar with football, or as familiar as you are with football. You know, patience is a virtue, and you cannot teach these women like men. And I think most of the women listening who are football players know that. We can, you know, improve the game by, you know, trial and error, but less air, if you know what I'm saying. We need to make sure that we're teaching people how to play the basics, fundamentals first before we try drawing up plays. And that's one of the things I've seen a lot in women's football, is that people are trying to do things that don't work in their system. They're just throwing plays out there. Hey, this will be a cool play to run. It's like, yes, but do you have the personnel? Can you throw a 35-yard pass? Do you have the speed to hit the outside when you have that little wing tee, what's it called, speed sweep or fly sweep, you know? I've just seen so much film on people running stuff that they don't have the personnel to do. So, you know, coaches, swallow your pride, change your system if it has to be changed, because just because you have a playbook that's worked for 25 years doesn't mean it's going to work in women's football. You have to really evaluate your players and teach them how to play football before you can teach them how to run plays. And that's one of the advantages that, you know, Pittsburgh, who else, the Amazons, Sirens, Seattle has a bunch of rookies this year, but they're much better. Dallas has been playing together forever. Then you have, it looks like Boston is just flowing right now, and that's nice. So, I mean, it's just important for the coaches to take a grasp of everything out there and make sure that we're doing our part to improve the game. It's one, you know, it's one thing where everybody complains, we were never going to be anything until we have one league. That's not technically true. That's the desired goal, yes, but we need to make sure that these women are playing true football. And that's been one of my goals this year, to make sure that people know what they're doing. And people still don't know exactly what they're doing, because I think there's some sort of detractor in a locker room that as soon as you walk out of the locker room doors and onto the field, it's kind of like the Men in Black Red thing, you know, where you put the sunglasses on, you push the button, and they forget everything, because that's what I see happening. They get out on the field, they forget everything they've been taught for 3 months. And for the guys that have been around football and playing football, been coaching football, you know, it's second nature. Well, guess what? It's not even third or fourth nature for these women. And, you know, it takes patience and time, and you just need to be able to deal with that. And I think consistency year after year with coaching staffs, playbooks, and I guess you hear all my players laughing right now. Playbooks? You change your playbook every year. Yes, I do. I change my playbook every year, but only the verbiage of the playbook, just because, you know, we got to keep learning. So everybody keep working hard out there. Thank you so much for listening tonight. Once again, you know, I'll be back here and there. Once the season's over, we can join back into some of the stuff. You know, college football season will be starting, NFL will be starting. I hope everybody enjoyed the draft and your player went to your favorite team or your favorite NFL team. you know, improved their standing and has a chance this year. Football is a year-round sport because we have college and NFL in the fall, and we have women in the winter or spring. While we not have games in the winter, we believe me, there's women's football all over the place, and they're just all practicing and learning. So keep marketing your teams, keep getting the word out, recruit, because the more players you have, as DC, who have hundreds of people at their tryouts and have to do cuts and invites to back to the second tryouts and stuff like that. So that's just, you know, keep doing it. It's going to grow. It's going to get better. And it's all up to the coaching staffs and managements to build your teams. And I'm very happy to be a part of it. Everybody, enjoy your Wednesday night for those of you on the East Coast. Thanks for listening. It's pretty late out there, coming up on 11 p.m. for you out here at 8 p.m. It's beautiful here in Southern California. The sun is just now setting right outside my porch. I can see the beach. And the birds are chirping. Dogs are barking. Parents are running back by with their screaming kids. So everybody, enjoy the time you have right now. Women's football is a great thing. It's going to continue to grow with the help and support of all you fans, coaches, management, and players. I am Coach Penn. Feel free to email me with any topics or concerns that you'd like to put out there. I'm always open to hearing other people's input because it's what can we do together, not what can we do to bring somebody else down. So good luck to all the coaches this weekend. May your games be very eventful and exciting, and may your players all get out of it unscathed. This has been Coach Penn. Third and Long's my program. I'm back on the air. I'm not sure when I'll be back again, as I do have some things to do, but I will be on the air this Saturday for the broadcast of the Tucson Breakers game, and then I will be back on the air at least June 13th for the Sacramento Amazon game. So those are two things you can look forward to hearing me back on. Let me see. So email me, headcoach@californiaquakefootball.com. Everybody have a good night, and I will talk to you sooner rather than later. Good night, everyone.